sweet listeners. It's another week of the podcast, and for those of you who are counting, we are at episode 145. My guest this week is so very cool. Julia Albane has quite the resume. She's going to talk about it a little bit later in the podcast, but for now, I'll just give you a few details. She was part of Team Starkid, which was an American musical theater company founded in 2009 at the University of Michigan. Through the company, she played Vincent Crabbe in both a Very Potter musical and a Very Potter sequel, and then was also in Starship. She did a lot of other work with them and really experienced success right out of college at a very young age. But sometimes in life, what you think you want, when you get it, you realize that maybe it isn't exactly all that you dreamt it would be. And so now, Julia has a very different life. As the owner of her own healing company, Julia Albane Energy Medicine. We talk a lot this episode about magic, about synchronicity, and about her journey to wellness and to finding just exactly where she was supposed to be in the world. I hope you love the conversation just as much as I did. So now, episode 145 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
You know you're like a real hardcore alcoholic when you later, years later, connect to other alcoholics and you tell them how much you were drinking and they go like, oh shit. You know, like anytime I meet a fellow alcoholic and they're like, what was your drinking at the end? And I tell them how much I was drinking. They're like, oh fuck. You know, so and I didn't really have context at the time. I knew I had a problem, but I was in it and I was alone in it. So I knew I needed to quit. And I tried for probably 2 or 3 years. I'd been trying to get sober and it just wasn't sticking.
Who are you as a human being? How would you self-describe?
Whoa, fascinating. I mean, I think the first layer, the like more surface introductory layer, I am an energy worker and I teach energy work. So energy work for healing, but also just energy work for transformation and possibility and sort of self-discovery. But like when I bring that in a little closer, like who am I as a human? I'm like a creator and an explorer of like psyche. Like that is what feels true. You know, I get really curious and nerdy about what this all is. And, this is where I'm gesturing to the everything, what this all is and what we are and what it can be. That I think has been where I've been really nerding out lately is like the place where we have some creative capacity. And that's just my constant question is like, what else could this be? What else could we be doing?
It sounds like potentially, and I don't want to go too far here, but there might be a great sense of play in what you do. Is that true?
100%. I mean, I think that has been I've been grateful for that development because I think when I first sort of really stepped into what I do now, it was with a lot of heaviness and seriousness. Like I was really like a healer, right? And I really walked with this thing of like, we have to heal the world. And like, if you're lucky, and a lot of people are carrying that right now. And like, if you're lucky, you burn yourself out on that one. And you're like, oh, this sucks. You know, I'll kill myself if I keep trying to save the world. So it luckily transformed into more of just a curiosity and a play.
I always think, you know, I've said this before in a previous podcast that I had that same desire. I want to heal the world. And then I kind of quickly understood because I love bed so much that it's like super exhausting to take all that on. It's like trying to eat a whole hoagie sandwich at once. And I realized that there's a lot more beauty in the idea that
you know, they have that saying, 1,000 points of light, 1 billion points of light all over the planet of everyone who's trying to heal, you know, maybe their neighbor or create a nonprofit or clean the local river where they, that's close to them, have a relationship with the land. That takes a lot of the pressure and the stress off of me. And it also gives me hope because I know that there are a lot of other beautiful, beautiful, inspired, gorgeous people out there doing good things or wishing good for others, you know? A lot of people I talk to say, I want to change things. I really want to change things in these grand ways. And I always think back to, you know, you changing things could be buying a cup of coffee and a muffin for the gentleman that's sleeping rough outside, you know, that would change his entire day. You don't have to like walk up to someone and heal them like Christ.
Yeah. Yes. Also, like what no one wants to hear when they're still real. And I think it's like just a phase we go through and hopefully we go through it. You know what I mean? And that could stay there. I just like I meet people and they're just new and you're like, awesome. Like you're there, do that thing. You know what I mean? Hopefully though, we get you through that. But when you're in that, like that identity also relies on you viewing the world as broken and messed up. And that, like when I caught that myself, I was like, oh, that's a little problematic because I'm moving through the world and I'm looking for what's wrong with it, you know, and I'm looking for things being, and I'm assuming that I know what good and not good is and what right and wrong is and I'm assuming that I know how this world is supposed to be rather than showing up to it and being like, what's here? Like, how can I meet it? You know what I mean? What could surprise me about this?
Well, and I think with that attitude, there's a greater sense of delight because you never know what to expect. It's more exciting. You know?
Yes. 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 You know, I think a lot, but before I got into what I'm doing now, I was in the arts. I was an actor and a director, and there was a show I was directing that was very spiritual in nature. And so when like in between rehearsals and stuff, we found ourselves as a cast, like really chewing on these pretty like, you know, big ideas. And one day there was just like a real nihilism in the room. Like it was just there and it was sort of cool. And we were like, what's the point? Like, what are we doing? And someone was like, or no, someone even, they were like, why are we doing this? Like, why are we putting on a play? Like, what are we doing? There's a lot of time in it. We're making a play. Like, what are we doing? And someone was like, we're just passing time until we die. And it like, so it was so interesting because some people in the room hated that. It was like really confronting. Some people loved it. Like I kind of loved it. I was like, whoa, that just liberated something in me where it was like, we're passing time until we die. So it's like, what's interesting? And that feels very alive in my work now lately, actually. It's more just like, just another interesting way to pass time. You know what I mean?
I mean, I found as I've gotten older, I'm just getting more sloppy about everything just because partially I like being sloppy and it's fun. And it also takes the pressure off of me, right? I have a couple of events this week. Tonight I have an author event for a local Santa Fe author. And tomorrow there's a live podcast event. At any rate, you know, I have a lot of stress around both these things because I want them to go well. I want, you know, the author to feel appreciated and heard and successful because one of my missions is to always lift people up in Santa Fe, anywhere. I've realized as I've gotten older, just like, I don't know, coloring outside the lines and being sloppy. And like, you know, I've lately been going to work, not that I've lost all self-respect, mind you, but like, you know, I have no one to impress. I like literally don't care. I just want to like get the work done. You know what I mean? Like I want to help people or do things for people and get the work done. Whereas when I was in my 20s, I was like, oh my God, it takes me 2 hours to get ready to go out.
Yeah, and yeah.
Like 5 minutes, man, let's go. Let's get some shit done in this world.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the beautiful things about getting older is it kind of crystallizes. Now you're not as old as me. Okay. Listeners, let's just understand. She's dewy and fresh faced.
I may not be as young as you think I am.
Well, you look great.
Well, thanks.
Yes.
You got these nice Zoom filters these days.
Yes. And it's like, as you get a little older and you understand or appreciate things, those cares and concerns kind of fall away, at least for me. But it sounds like for you as well.
Oh yeah. But also like when I was in my 20s, I couldn't wait to be in my 30s. Like literally from the, I had the opposite thing of most people where they're, I've been like, oh my God, just get me into my 30s. And then now that I'm in my 30s, I'm like, dude, my 40s are going to be fucking great. You know what I mean? I'm pushing in on 40 now. And I'm like, this is like a whole other level of not giving a fuck that I cannot wait for, you know? And it literally felt like in my 20s, I was like, I don't care, but I'm supposed to pretend to care. And so I have to like do the thing with all the other girls and blah, 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 blah. And yeah, when I remember when I literally felt like when I hit 30, I was like, oh, thank God. There's like a level of giving a fuck that I can let go of. And now that I'm almost 40, I'm like, can't wait to take this coat off again. Like cannot wait for another layer of not caring, but caring about the real things at the center. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I just don't want to give energy to the things that I know don't matter. And I just want to be able to sort of, like you're saying, be messy with the things that feel really interesting.
Yeah. Like just splash beauty all over the place. Like slob. It's my
yeah, goal. Love that. Sloppy beauty. Just yes. Gonna slop beauty all over the place. Hell yeah.
I wanted to ask you, so if this isn't too personal, why did you stop directing and acting? Like, what moved you from that space?
I can reflect on it in a lot of ways. Like, at a real core, it was like a health and identity crisis, because while I had been successful in that world, you know what I mean? Unlike, like, I graduated and I pretty much almost immediately was able to work and worked and had got to do great things. Like, I had a whole career in my 20s where, for the most part, I was paying my bills doing art, right? Which not a lot of people get to say. And so, like, I did some big projects, and I can remember being in the middle of big projects that are objectively like, this is a big deal. And inside, I have one specific memory that's like in my mind as I'm describing this to you. It's like, objectively, I'm in a major career peak moment. And inside, I was like so empty. It was like so empty and hollow. I can remember being like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I think I'm supposed to feel happy in this moment. I think I'm supposed to be excited, you know, and I feel pretty dead inside. On top of that, I was a raging alcoholic through that whole period, right? And so alcohol crept in and then became like the major coping tool to deal with, I would say, a lot of personal stuff, but a lot of like toxicity of that work. Like, the art world is very toxic. You know, there's just a lot, and there's stuff changing. Like, we're having some moments of turbulence that are trying to break some stuff up, but it's hard. So I just had a breakdown, and I didn't intentionally step away, but I definitely stepped into a period of healing, especially when I got sober. Started exploring energy work for myself, didn't intend for it to become my career. And in fact, when I left Chicago and moved to LA, I had been doing energy work for a couple of years just for myself, for fun. Still had my toe in that world, was moving to LA with a bunch of people I'd been working with. And I thought I was going to LA to continue to step back into the art career. But when I got to LA, I just started getting people would hear that I did energy work and they would be like, can we do a session? Plus, and within the first month I was in LA, I had more work doing energy work than I had doing art. And I was like, this is weird, but I'll go with it. You know what I mean? And it was really like, it felt like in a moment I was like, sure. And then the universe just was like, okay, that's all we needed, and swept me into like an entirely other timeline. That was truly how it felt. It was like within a second, I was just on a path to a different life.
I have to ask you, because I am like the world's worst actor. I'm like bad. And that's okay. I accept my shortcomings because I can't memorize lines. I get super nervous in front of people. So then that makes me forget my lines. Mm-hmm. You know, as a token, because I tried out for the musical in high school for 4 years, the acting guy, the teacher who was always doing the musicals, gave me a token role as the maid in My Fair Lady, who didn't have to sing and had very few lines, because I think he appreciated my diligence of putting myself out there. But when I tried out for all the parts over 4 years, I could do improv and I made people laugh the entire time.
Yeah.
You know, I did different things. I mean, I literally can't act. I also tried out to do some voices for a podcast here, a fiction podcast. And my dear friend who's created and directed the podcast was like, no. And I'm like, okay, I accept my shortcomings. Like, it's okay. Deep breath. But did you ever find it? I mean, I'm not sure what projects you worked on or like if you have to memorize a monologue or whatever, but was that hard for you or is it just natural or is it exciting to like take a big bite out of something creative like that? Like, how was that for you?
It's funny. I just, when I was in Chicago, very randomly, one of my students, my energy students, who's in, I run a year-long energy program and she's in my energy program, knows nothing about me or my past life outside of energy. And she's a filmmaker and she emailed, she's like, this is so random, but would you ever consider trying out acting? Like I have this little test shoot that I want to do and would you want to try it? And I was like, Carrie, I have a very expensive acting degree that goes unused actually. So I got to step my toe back into that when I was in Chicago, just for fun, just for the day. And what was really funny in going back to it was I was like, oh, that part, the memorizing lines, was actually really not easy for me. You know, that, yeah, I don't know. And I think it's just a brain thing. I think some people's brains can do it in a certain way. I remember being in acting school, and one of the challenges of that was as people, you know, and I had a good teacher that was basically like, you got to figure out what brain you have, how you can get your brain to work in this industry. Because if you have a brain that doesn't memorize lines well, you're going to have to come up with different tricks, right? I have a dear friend. He's very successful. He works in LA. He books a lot. Terrible at memorizing. But he has figured out his mechanisms over the years of how he can do it. And he busts his butt. That's part of the thing. He busts his butt. You know, I think like part of the other reason I left, I mean, I had a singular situation where I had a lot of opportunity. But aside from that, in like the traditional track, like it was like within months of graduating college that I was like, oh, I hate being an actor. I love acting. I don't like the business of it. I don't like preparing for auditions. I don't like all that stuff. And other friends of mine, they could like it, you know? And that was something like no one had said to me, but it was like, if you, like you could, you're smart. I know that you could, if you really wanted to, like work yourself into getting good at memorizing lines. But like, I don't know, maybe that's not that interesting to you. You know what I mean? Maybe it's sort of one of those things where you go like, I don't want to have to work this hard for this thing. So I'm just going to go find the thing I am good at, which is improv, you know?
Did you grow up in a religious household or what did that look like for you as a kid?
Yeah, I grew up in a very religious household. You got so excited by that. I grew up in a very religious household. Many members of my family are still quite religious. My brother and I are the two that have sort of like found a different path for ourselves. What was that like? I mean, I think I am still very actively deconstructing a lot of that. You know, I do energy work now. It's inherently very spiritual. I feel the most spiritual I've ever felt in my life. I feel like I talk to God and what that means to me all day, every day. Like that's my job now, but it's so different than what I was raised with, you know? And while, yeah, I don't even know if it's a respect and acceptance for the way I was raised and what it was and why it was that way because of where my parents had come from and just our culture. Like I get it now. And also I think like in the past few years, I've been really making space for just a lot of grief I have for how much harm was caused, you know, not by anyone's fault, but just by what it was and the harm that I still see on other people, you know?
I mean, I don't know your whole story, but it is interesting that you bring in the harm aspect. And, you know, when you're a kid and these things are happening to you or around you, often it's hard to have the courage to speak up and say, hey, I don't like that. Or, hey, that makes me uncomfortable. Or, hey, that makes me sad. And so mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of adults walking around these days who are just deeply, deeply wounded and trying to reconstruct or or heal their wounding, but having to do all this deep work to unpack it. And what does that mean? And how did it affect you? And all of this stuff, you know, I don't know your story, but I highly doubt that the adults who are, I mean, this is a generalized statement, who are running these churches or these youth groups or these what have you, religious institutions, are meaning to harm, hurt people or kids.
Oh, of course not.
But there's something that's happening that is damaging and not working.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you have that conversation with them, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had bits and pieces of it with my parents because, like, we have a degree of openness and they are not, you know, it's not been a thing where they're like, they've attacked me for stepping in a different direction. And they've asked me at times, like, where are you at? What are your beliefs? What do you feel? The big aha for me was, you know, I had been, and I was quite religious. I was still going to church into my 20s. You know what I mean? I was going to church when I would be going to church kind of drunk, you know what I mean? Because I was still hungover, you know, like I was going to church while I was also in the midst of big addiction stuff. And then I, you know, got sober, was doing a lot of internal work, like was going to therapy, was like doing all this stuff. And then I think there was a time where I went back to church. And I was sitting there listening to, and, you know, and the sermon maybe was just like objectively fine. It was a good neutral sermon. Maybe it was really optimistic. And then I was like listening to the songs, the worship music. And so many of the songs had some phrase, some sentence of like, well, I'm a miserable sinner, but thank God for God and Jesus, right? I'm worthless, but thank God. It was just baked into the songs. They sounded like beautiful songs, but for the first time I was hearing these words, and it was a moment of both like understanding and compassion for everyone, including all those adults. Cause I was like, we're not even hearing, but this is the messaging that's been just run through our brains since we were little. I'm worthless. I'm worthless. Because I just been doing all this personal work and been going to therapy. I'm like, I'm paying thousands of dollars right now to convince myself that I'm not a worthless piece of shit. You know what I mean? So I cannot sit in this church and hear even one sentence that touches on that. I just can't do it. I won't do it to myself. You know what I mean? And I just saw, I was like, it's not that anyone is out here intentionally trying to create harm, but the harm has been so invisibly woven into the fabric of that institution that it will take a long time and people really consciously unpacking and unweaving that before it can be healed. And I just can't be in that space until it is. Amazing grace that saved a wretch like me. You know what I mean? A wretch. You know, like, do we consider that one of the most beautiful songs that saved a wretch like me? You know, I just heard it different. I was like, I'm not a wretch. I'm not a wretch. And I don't think my God thinks I'm a wretch, you know, and I don't know that this is actually worship. But I don't know that I believe in a God that wants me to sing about what a wretch I am.
I really appreciate and love that because this world is so challenging and hard as it is, you know, especially for women. Well, for really anyone, kids, like everyone, we have society, we have culture, like telling us to do better, to look better, to weigh less, to change. And then you go to church, which is supposed to be accepting and forgiving and loving and inclusive. And they're like, you're a wretch, you're worthless, you're a sinner. Yeah. And it's like, where can we find a little space where we feel good about ourselves? Where?
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't know, churches should be celebrating and, you know, they might, you can take me to task, churches, come on in and take me to task. But
I mean, that's where I feel about it. It's like, I would love to see an uprising of people basically saying like, we need to deconstruct and reconstruct this. Like, I'm Jesus, like, you know, my homeboy, like all about it, you know, like when I have conversations with other Christians and stuff, and there's the defense of like, well, it's not all bad churches. And I was like, I'm not saying it's all bad churches, but there is a fabric of dysfunction woven in? And at what point will enough of you basically say, like, I care too much about this institution to let it continue to be tainted? And I'm going to do the work, the really gnarly work of unpacking the harm so that we can recreate something beautiful together.
I love that. I'm a panentheist, so I'm not Christian, but one of the most amazing books I read was The Existential Jesus. And it was absolutely fascinating because I'm...
Who wrote that?
I'll have to look that up and send that to you. Okay. It is unbelievable. I have a low Christology, which means that I believe Jesus was mostly human.
Yeah.
Only because it makes him more accessible and relatable. And, you know, I can understand him. But this book, I mean, I did not know what to expect. I'm like, whatever. I read it and it completely changed my viewpoint on just this very human being, right? Who maybe had an understanding beyond ours, or who had a connection beyond ours, or is part of this larger story, right? This hero's journey that we all go on, but was more like into the world. I mean, deeply infused into the world, that he had this story to play out. And it just is like, how was Jesus human, this book? And so it goes through all these stories. And I was like, oh my God. And then the one that got me, that gets me every time, like I get upset about it because it's so, is, you know, he knows he has to live out this fate, right? To save humanity. He knows he has to do it. Like, this is part of the contract. He has to make his father happy, but this is like, he's in service to all of humanity. And he goes up to the garden, you know, and he's by himself and he's like, please take this cup away from me. He doesn't want to die, you know, because he's so in love with the world. He's so in love with his friends. He's so in love with what's going on around him. Like, this world is an enchanted place. Even though it has its issues, it is enchanting. And there's beauty everywhere, everywhere. And why would anybody want to leave that?
Wow. I'd never felt that texture of that part of the story, to imagine this being. Let's assume this person is incredibly spiritually connected, right? Knows the like grandness of an afterlife that he is promised. And yet he's begging to stay here on earth, you know, and how the church has put so emphasis on like, isn't it so great that we get to go to heaven? And meanwhile, you have Jesus being like, I'd like to stay, please. I like it here.
I mean, that's just, I'm probably projecting onto Jesus. Can you believe that? How dare I project? Well, but,
and there's another interpretation of that story that I've always thought about, is like, what if the mission was all of the teaching that he was trying to do to basically awaken these powers in us, right? And that's subversive. And so we killed him, kind of like how we killed Martin Luther King Jr., right? Like, we turned the story into like, oh, he had to die. That was his mission. And you're like, I don't know, maybe he had a mission and then we killed him. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if Martin Luther King's purpose was to die for us. I think he had a mission and it was subversive, and so we killed him.
I mean, humans have a great ability to shift and change history so that it fits with their paradigms and their worldviews. Right. I would never be so, I didn't live back then, right? But I do know that, I've said this before, one of the hugest fights I got in with an ex-boyfriend was at this amazing Indian restaurant in Portland when I lived there for like 20 years, 23 years, whatever. And he was very Catholic, but liberal Catholic, and wanted to change church from within and whatever. Anyway, and I was thinking about going to seminary, and I'd been doing a lot of reading, and we had this huge, massive fight about the Council of Nicaea. It was like the biggest fight. I walked out of the restaurant and later on he said, he laughed and he's like, I'll never be able to tell anyone that our biggest fight was about the Council of Nicaea. Like, who does that? Who has that fight? But my point was, like, in the council, it was a bunch of humans deciding what got included and didn't get included in the Bible. And so humans make mistakes and they have their prejudices and predilections. And so nothing's perfect. No matter what you say about anything, it's not perfect. And so it's good to have an open mind about all the possibilities that are out there.
Totally. It's so funny that you say that, because I was just saying to someone the other day, I was like, the one sticking point that always seems to rile people up the most when I'm talking to someone who's Christian and they're asking me, like, why can't I believe? And the thing I always bring in that always just like ruffles everyone's feathers is the Council of Nicaea. I'm like, how do you reconcile that this book that you take as law was voted on by a governing, like a government? It's a government voted book. And that we know now that there's a bunch of these other texts that they voted out. I'm super into the Gnostic texts. I love reading the Gnostic texts. And I've been reading, there's a great author, I forget his name right now. He does a lot of translations of the Gnostic texts. And his ones on Mary Magdalene are amazing, because basically the way he translates the text they found is like Mary Magdalene was maybe the only one that like really could understand the Jesus teachings on a quantum level. And in the way he translated it, it's like Mary Magdalene asked these most insane, like quantum questions to Jesus. And Jesus is like trying to meet her, is like talking to her there. And then the apostles would be like, but what about sin, Jesus? And you like almost feel Jesus sigh where he's just like, ugh, you know? And so I just like love, you know, I'm like, that stuff's so interesting. But we voted it out. And I've always been talking to people like, how do you reconcile that? And that's the moment where I always feel the wall come down, you know, because it's painful. If you've committed your life to a way of thinking and believing, and then you get confronted with something that potentially cracks that, you can really feel in people either the willingness to grow, even if it's painful, or the like, I cannot possibly let my world be deconstructed by this fact.
Well, I would love to hear any stories where you've experienced something like magical or miraculous or something synchronistic or something that, well, either you could have witnessed it, like it happened in the world to someone else, or that you've experienced.
I mean, one thing I'll say is like, because of the work I do now, I've sort of filled my life with these moments, right? Because I get to see it on clients all the time. Like we're watching these really synchronistic, magical moments happen in the context of energy work and spiritual exploration. And that feels like a real gift. And what's interesting, I was thinking about it recently, is like, I wonder if some of us subconsciously like keep ourselves from miracles because we think if that becomes the norm, then it'll just get old. And I was reflecting the other day, I was like, it hasn't gotten old, even though I can probably almost every day have one of those moments with a client and it doesn't get old and it's never not awe-inspiring. And when I had that realization the other day, I was like, oh, that's really comforting. I'm actually going to like let in more miracles, because it's not, the more miracles doesn't make it less amazing. The one, when you were asking the question, that came to mind was, in the last 6 months of my drinking, of my alcoholism, and I was in it, you know what I mean? You know, you're like a real hardcore alcoholic when you years later connect to other alcoholics and you tell them how much you were drinking and they go like, oh shit. You know, like anytime I meet a fellow alcoholic and they're like, what was your drinking at the end? And I tell them how much I was drinking, they're like, oh fuck, you know? So. And I didn't really have context at the time. I knew I had a problem, but I was in it and I was alone in it. So I knew I needed to quit. And I tried for probably 2 or 3 years. I'd been trying to get sober and it just wasn't sticking. And so I think I'd hit a point where I was like, I think this is it. Like, I think I'm never going to be able to get sober. There's certain things in my life I'm never going to experience because of that. You know, I'd sort of given up the idea of having a relationship or a partnership, because I was like, no one couldn't tolerate this. So I'm just going to have to be alone. All this stuff. In those last probably 6 months of my drinking, I started having dreams, started maybe like once a month. And then it was like once every couple of weeks. And then it was like once or twice a week, I would have dreams. And then eventually, like walking down the street during the day, voices in my head that were like, you are dying, you are going to die, and we need you to stop drinking. You know, it was like that intense voice of God in your ear being like, you're going to die and we need you to stop, you know? And then I remember one specific day, and I'd been hearing the voice, you know, it's like something pretty intense when you're like hearing the voice of God in your ear being like, you're going to die and I need you to stop drinking. And you're like, we'll see. You know what I mean? Like, you're just sort of like, oh, I'll take it under advisement. Like, And so I've been having this for probably 6 months, this voice, you know what I mean? Like very insistent, being like, I need you to stop. I need you to stop. I need you to stop. And then finally there was one day, it makes me a little emotional thinking about it. I was walking down the street and the voice was there again. And I could even feel the part of me like that was starting to turn it out. But this time the voice was like, I promise you, if you can give this up, you will live the life of your dreams. You know what I mean? Like everything that you think you want and desire, I promise you, like give this up, hand this over, and all of that will be there for you. You know, it didn't instantly change things, but I think it landed in a way that then probably within the next few months, I was able to drop it and it stuck. And just recently, I had a moment where I was looking around my life and I was like, I'm here. Like, this is it, you know? And in fact, I got sober on New Year's Day. And Michael and I's anniversary of meeting each other is New Year's. And Michael proposed to me on New Year's. So New Year's is both my soberversary, but it's also this representation of, you know, for those who don't know, Michael's my partner. And it's an incredible, I mean, it's like a love of a lifetime. It's an incredible relationship. And so, yeah, like that to me, I think about that nugget all the time. The feeling of like, you know, the universe coming up next to you and being like, hey, you matter. It's like, I want you to stay here with us.
Dear listeners, I hope you enjoyed the conversation I had with the effervescent and dynamic Julia Albane. To find out more about who this beautiful soul is, please visit her website at albaneenergymedicine.com. There will be a link to that website under the episode show notes, as well as to another site, radicalhealers.org, where you can do a little bit of a deeper dive about the space in which Julia's operating. I really encourage each and every one of you and find out more of what makes her tick. Thank you, Julia, for trusting me and being an incredible guest. I need to thank the creators of the music used in this episode, and there were a lot this time. Justin Allen Arnold, Tim Kulig, Taiga Sound Productions, Artie the AI and Sasha End, Koala Vert, Frank Schroeder, and K. Jarton Abel. For complete attribution, please see the Bite Size Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, there will be a link to Julia's website on the treasures page of that site, as well as complete attribution for all the music that I used this week. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Julia. Or you can be a little bit like me, but really be like Julia. When the universe intervenes in your life and says, hey, listen to me. Hey, this might be a good idea. Hey, why don't you think about doing this? You know, no matter what it is, think about listening. You know, you can drag your feet. It can take you a little while to come around to the universe's point of view. And you might just grumble a little bit, because grumbling is allowed. But take a chance and listen to that voice. That voice wants what's best for you. It wants you to live into all your dreams. It wants you to live to make this world a better place. So be like Julia and listen to the voice. Understand it only wants what's best for you. And sooner or later, you'll find yourself in a whole new, beautiful life.